The life and light of a nation are inseparable. James A. Garfield. Even severed as it was from the rest of the body, the hand was majestic. 16 feet tall, with long, tapered fingers holding aloft a 29-foot torch, it sat on the banks of a small lake in Philadelphia in the summer of 1876. It was all that existed of the Statue of Liberty, and it had been shipped in pieces from France for the United States Centennial Exhibition, a World's Fair celebrating the country's first 100 years. 10 years later, the complete figure, rising more than 150 feet from its pedestal and with a bright skin of copper, would be installed in New York Harbor to the awe and admiration of the world. But in 1876, the Statue of Liberty, like the young country to which it would be given, was still a work in progress. A symbol of promise, perhaps, but not yet of triumph. Across the lake from the statue, James Abram Garfield walked with his wife and 6 children under a flawless sky, the scent of a recent rain still hanging in the air. A tall man with broad shoulders and a warm smile, Garfield was, in many ways, the embodiment of the Centennial Exhibition's highest ideals. At just 44 years of age, he had already defied all odds. Born into extreme poverty in a log cabin in rural Ohio, and fatherless before his 2nd birthday, he had risen quickly through the layers of society, not with aggression or even overt ambition, but with a passionate love of learning that would define his life. That love had brought him to Philadelphia for the opening day of the Centennial Fair. Although he was a congressman, Garfield traveled through the exhibition unaided by guards or guides of any kind. Except for his statuesque height and soldier's posture, he was indistinguishable from the hundreds of thousands of other fairgoers who swarmed the rain-soaked grounds and the 80 miles of asphalt walkways. In just a few weeks, these walkways would be transformed by the summer sun into hot, sticky, lava-like rivers, trapping shoes and small animals. But on that day, they felt smooth and solid as the crowd surged through the fairgrounds, headed toward one destination above all others: Machinery Hall. With 14 acres of exhibits, Machinery Hall shivered with life. It pulsed and throbbed so irresistibly that the wooden plank floors vibrated underfoot. Conversations were either muffled by a heavy humming or forced to an early and violent end by a sharp, sudden clack. Exhibits included everything from a machine that could weave a customer's name into a pair of suspenders while he waited, to an internal combustion engine that William Ford, Henry Ford's father, had traveled all the way from his farm in Dearborn, Michigan, to see. These exhibits were finely calibrated to appeal to no man more than James Garfield. A former professor of ancient languages, literature, and mathematics, who had paid for his first year of college by working as a carpenter, Garfield's interests and abilities were as deep as they were broad. In fact, so detailed was his interest in mathematics, and so acute his understanding, that he had recently written an original proof of the Pythagorean theorem during a free moment at the Capitol. The New England Journal of Education had published the proof just the month before, transparently astonished that a member of Congress had written it. Despite Garfield's deep admiration for mathematics and the arts, however, he believed that it was science, above all other disciplines, that had achieved the greatest good. The scientific spirit has cast out the demons and presented us with nature, clothed in her right mind and living under the reign of law, he wrote. It has given us, for the sorceries of the alchemist, the beautiful laws of chemistry, for the dreams of the astrologer, the sublime truths of astronomy, for the wild visions of cosmogony, the monumental records of geology, for the anarchy of diabolism, the laws of God.